Right. Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. So this is the third matter on our oral argument calendar, and I'll ask the marshal to call the case.
The case is in re the marriage of Andrew John Stevens versus Kyla Ann Stevens, case number A201082.
All right, and counsel, I'll just make a few quick remarks before we go ahead with the argument. First of all, welcome and thank you for coming today. We look forward to hearing your arguments. Our procedures have remained the same, even though we are proceeding via Zoom. If you have any questions about that, you know, let us know, but it should appear to be otherwise very ordinary and the things will happen the same way they happened when we were in a courtroom. At the beginning of your argument, please identify yourself for the record as well as your client. We do maintain the recording of this argument on our website, and occasionally it's helpful to us. And so identifying yourself is helpful to us as well. And then please keep an eye on the clock. That should be visible to you on the screen, and it tends to go quickly during our conversation. So with that, I'll turn things over to counsel for appellant. You can begin when you're ready.
Your Honors, may it please the court, my name is Michael D. Ditburner. I represent the appellant, Andrew Stevens. This appeal involves the question over whether one sentence in the party's stipulated divorce decree carved out an exception to the decree's grant of joint legal custody, giving respondents sole legal custody on school choice for the remainder of the party's then six-year-old daughter's minority, thus making it unnecessary for the district court to reach the merits of appellant's school choice motion. The district court decided that respondent had sole legal custody on school choice, meaning that appellant had to show endangerment, and because the appellant had not shown endangerment, his motion must be denied. This appeal also involves the issue of whether the district courts made sufficient findings in denying appellant's parenting time modification motion. I want to briefly highlight just some relevant facts from the party's 2012 divorce proceeding. One, the parties were living in South St. Paul at the time of their separation in February of 2012, at which time respondent relocated to Stillwater and divorce proceedings were commenced. Both appellant and respondent petitioned for joint legal custody without equivocation or conditions. Three, appellant and respondent agreed to joint legal custody without equivocation or conditions in May of 2012, along with joint physical custody and an almost equal parenting time schedule. Their agreement was reduced to court order on June 27, 2012. Four, one issue remained unresolved: where the minor child was to attend school, South St. Paul or Stillwater. Paragraph 8B of this stipulated order from June of 2012 noted the parties had agreed to choose a parenting consultant to, quote, address the issue of the minor child's school enrollment, end of quote, the issue of where the minor child was to attend school. Five, ultimately no parenting consultant was selected, and the parties reached agreement on the language that's reflected in the first full paragraph on page 7 of the party's decree, where three sentences appear. First sentence contains the party's definition of joint legal custody as meaning that both parents have equal rights and responsibilities determining the child's upbringing, including education. Second sentence has the parties stating that neither parent's rights were superior to that of the other parent. And then finally, the third sentence, the parties stated, quote, the parties have agreed that respondent shall have the right to decide the minor child's school location, end of quote. What the third sentence does not say is that respondent has sole legal custody on the issue of the minor child's school location. Yet the district court interpreted it that way, and that's why we are here today. I want to first take a look at the issue of the deference.
Let me jump in, because I have a question. What would be the difference if there's a dispute on school choice? As you're saying, the parties had a joint custody agreement. What's the difference here?
The difference would have been that the decision would have been decided on the basis of best interests as opposed to whether or not there's endangerment. That would be the difference. Is that what you were contemplating, Your Honor?
I think it is, but my question is more getting to kind of the process. If father disagreed or disputed the decision that mother had made, then he would come to court and he would be arguing under the best interest standard as opposed to being required to prove endangerment.
That is correct.
What exactly in this case does the endangerment requirement mean? Does it mean that the the decision about what school endangers the child? Or is there something else broader than that that you would have to prove to show endangerment?
I think that Tarlin versus Sorensen contemplates that if the minor child were not to attend the school that my client proposed and were instead to attend the school that mother was selecting, that there would be endangerment. I think that that's what Tarlin versus Sorensen says, which is sort of like the contra to Novak v. Novak. Novak v. Novak says that it's best interest when you have two joint legal custodians. Tarlin versus Sorensen says that when one parent has sole legal custody, that there is a requirement to show endangerment in order to have a decision of a sole legal custodian challenged.
And there was no motion at the time to correct the language used or specify what the standard would be upon some dispute in the future on legal custody, right?
Right. This was a stipulated divorce decree. They entered into it. They were going to have a parenting consultant decide the issue for them. And ultimately, they reached agreement on where the child was going to attend school. That's reflected in the divorce decree's language. So the first issue is how much deference should be given to the district court in its interpretation? Graychick v. Graychick, Anderson versus Archer, Ertl versus Ertl, all cases cited in our principal brief of this court, state that interpretation of stipulated provisions in the divorce decree are reviewed de novo. And Vanderleest v. Vanderleest, that's V-A-N-D-E-R-L-E-E-S-T, 354 Northwest 2nd, 54 at 57, Court of Appeals decision from 1984, which is actually cited in Anderson versus Archer, states, quote, since this case turns on the interpretation of the stipulation incorporated into the party's divorce decree, we need give no deference to the findings of the district court, end of quote. Then we go to the issue of contract interpretation, because this court in Blonigan v. Blonigan and in Ertl versus Ertl has said that these rules of contract interpretation apply to divorce stipulations. Minnesota Supreme Court has a couple of decisions that are relevant, cited in our brief. Seagate Tech LLC versus Digg Corporation, 854 Northwest 2nd, 750. If a language is subject to only one reasonable interpretation, that interpretation must apply. Then there's Employers Mutual Liability Insurance Company, Wisconsin versus Eagle Lodge of Halleck. Supreme Court says the terms of a contract may not be construed so as to lead to a harsh or absurd result. We also want to point out that the respondent and respondent's brief has cited a rule of contract interpretation that was handed down by this court in Landwehr versus Landwehr, L-A-N-D-W-E-H-R.
So Mr. Dittbrenner, I'd like to, I do appreciate the thorough briefing on these issues and we've read it. But I'd like to ask you about the specific clause in the judgment and decree, which defines what the award of joint legal custody means. I'm looking in the addendum at page 30. And it indicates that there will be, both parents have equal rights and responsibilities. The relevant language says, including education. But the last sentence then says, parties have agreed that respondent, so that's mother here, shall have the right to decide the minor child's school location. So what about that? I know it's your position that that's ambiguous. I think it is your position that that's ambiguous. What about that language is ambiguous? Can't we read that together and decide, as the district court did, we're not deferring to it, but just agreeing to it, agreeing with the district court, that the parties have agreed that the mother shall have the right to decide the minor child's school location?
Well, I first of all believe that that there's an unambiguous declaration that the father has joint legal custody on the issue of education, which would be school choice. There's really no other type of...
Wouldn't that be ignoring the final sentence in that clause? I mean, we can't do that. I mean, standard contract interpretation is that we have to give effect to all the language.
Right. And I think that one would not be giving effect to the previous two sentences if one were to interpret that third sentence as giving mother sole legal custody on the issue of school choice. I think that the way that you harmonize and give meaning to all three sentences is to do just that. And I think you have to take
do just what? be clear for me, because I am confused. It seems to me that your interpretation would essentially completely negate that final sentence.
Actually, it would not, Your Honor.
Okay,
because I believe that if you interpret the third sentence to simply mean that in lieu of having a parenting consultant decide the issue of school location, the parties had instead decided that the child could attend school in Stillwater, that would be a way of giving meaning to all three sentences. And I think that's how you do the harmonizing without negating the third sentence, and you give it that type of meaning.
Wouldn't then the parties have just made a motion to amend to say just what you said, which is the parties agreed she will start school in Stillwater? Not really what the agreement was. There's a difference between those two things.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I would say that that's an absurd interpretation, simply because if you take a look at what the parties were doing with their case, is that they had settled everything except for where the minor child was to attend school. They had agreed on joint legal custody, and it makes no sense that respondent, the father, would have carved out an exception to his award of joint legal custody. Because if the parenting consultant had made the decision for them, the parenting consultant would have stripped him of legal custody on the issue of school choice. The parenting consultant would have just decided, you know what, the kid is going to go to school in Stillwater, and his rights would have been left intact. Because otherwise, you're viewing him as waiving a portion of his right to joint legal custody on the issue of education, which he had a full and complete award of. And
Mr. Ditburner, when you look at the first sentence in that paragraph, there are a lot of decisions that are made with respect to education other than simply the decision about where the child goes to school. So couldn't you harmonize these sentences by, you know, he clearly has input into other education related decisions, but with respect to specific location of school, that is carved out for the mother.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. And what I'm struggling is to find any kind of decision that this court has ever made on the issue of education that has not involved school choice. And in fact, the disagreement that they were having prior to entering into this agreement was on school choice with respect to Stillwater versus South St. Paul.
Sure.
And so that's just,
And I don't have a case citation to offer at the moment, but I mean, certainly parents disagree about extracurricular activities, about, you know, courses that are taken, about, you know, all sorts of different things. So it need not be limited exclusively in my mind to just decision about location.
That's true. I mean, you could come up with tutoring. You could come up with what class at a particular high school, for example, to take, whether or not the child should do distance learning versus in-person learning.
You could also have disputes over application of an IEP. So there might be lots of disputes that relate to a child's education that are apart from school choice. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, there would be. But in this context where they reached this agreement back when the child was 6 years old, the only dispute that they were having was on the issue of whether it was going to be Stillwater or South St. Paul where the child was going to be attending.
Right. And that's kind of where I was going, Mr. Dirtburner. Is it your argument that the first sentence and the third sentence create an ambiguity, or is your argument that the third sentence doesn't accurately reflect the real agreement and you have to go outside of the court's order, the decree in 2012, to find out what the real agreement was? And once you realize what had been put off, what specific issue had been put off to the parenting consultant, then you know what the real agreement isn't what's reflected in that third sentence. So which is your argument? Is it that the first and third conflict and therefore there's some kind of ambiguity, or that the third is just incorrect?
I think that the argument that I made in the brief was one that there is joint legal custody on school education, that's obvious. But also I would say that if you have a conflict between the third sentence and the other sentence, then you can look to rules, you should look to rules of contract interpretation to guide you in deciding how to resolve this case. And that it just doesn't make sense that this gentleman would have like waived for the next 12 years, the remaining years of his daughter's minority, the ability to have an equal say on school choice decisions. It just doesn't make sense in the context of how the parties ended up with the stipulated decree.
And to the extent that you're arguing that the third sentence is not an accurate reflection of the actual agreement, I'm a little concerned about a strict application of contract principles here, because you don't typically have a court order when you have a contract. Here you have a decree, and had there been a mistake in that decree, then the parties have an obligation, for lack of a better word, to correct that mistake at the time. And now here we are 8 years later, 9 years later, trying to correct the 2012 decree. And so I'm not sure that that's something that we can do at this stage.
Well, it says the parties have agreed. It doesn't say however, nevertheless, or but. And so what I'm straining is when they doesn't say that mother shall have sole legal custody, it just doesn't make sense to interpret that third sentence as meaning that she has sole legal custody when it doesn't use words like however or nevertheless. It just has this line in there about noting that the parties have agreed, which sounds like it's just simply reflecting that the parties reached an agreement on school choice without the need to have the parenting consultant make that decision.
I guess my question is, how can we today amend the 2012 decree?
I guess what I would submit, Your Honor, is that I don't think you'd be amending the 2012 decree to interpret in the way that we're proposing. I see that my time has elapsed. I'll take any additional questions.
Yeah, and I certainly would allow the panel to do that. Is there anything specific now? Or, you know, I'll point out, Mr. Dittmatter, you do have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well. So
yeah, I am interested in okay. The second issue, which is whether or not we had, you know, two motions before this district court and whether they were both addressed. But I'd be very satisfied if you address that in rebuttal.
Okay.
Right. So it helps sometimes to know what we're wanting to know about. So that should help you with your rebuttal remarks. So with that, I think we're ready to turn to the respondent.
Hey, please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sean Stokes, S-T-O-K-E-S, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Kyla Stevens, now known as Kyla Ann Sessing. I would say that there are a number of things in this proceeding that I agree with Mr. Dittmatter on, and I think probably the panel as well, not the least of which is that the party's judgment and decree was not well drafted, in particular conclusion of law number 4. The fact that it was not well drafted, however, does not mean that it's not enforceable. The intent of the party's agreement and the court's order is clear. The parties agreed to broadly share legal custody regarding their child. They did not, however, agree to share legal custody on every element that falls within that right. And this is not uncommon. It's not uncommon that parties would agree to share legal custody, but designate one parent as having authority to select healthcare providers. Just because they've carved out one exception to the broad sharing of legal custody does not create an absurdity, and it does not create an inconsistency. Another area where I agree with counsel is that contract interpretation should apply in reviewing the meaning of the party stipulation. Certainly a court order itself is not a contract. However, the party stipulation, which is the basis for the court order, it is a contract. And under the rules of contract interpretation or the canons of contract interpretation, the court must give meaning to all provisions. We can't just pretend that the final sentence in conclusion of law number 4 was superfluous or had no meaning. We're not allowed to do that under the canons of contract interpretation. Likewise, the canons of interpretation tell us that to the extent that there are provisions that may be contradictory, the specific controls the general. And so, again, what happened here is the parties agreed that they would share legal custody generally. They would share the right to have input in decision making about how their child was raised, about healthcare, about religion, about education generally. They did not agree to share decision-making regarding school choice. And I would ask this question. Mr. Dittmatter points to the fact that the parties had a settlement agreement from their social early neutral evaluation. And that agreement says that they will share legal custody, but that they will have a parenting consultant appointed for purposes of determining school location. Subsequent to that settlement, the parties modified their agreement. And instead of going forward with a parenting consultant, they designated mother to have sole authority to determine school location. So what if that hadn't have happened? And in the decree, they still had not agreed. So the decree, conclusion of law number four, reads exactly how it does now, except the last sentence, take that out and replace it with, the parties have agreed to appoint a parenting consultant for purposes of determining school choice. Would anyone argue that that somehow was inconsistent with the broad agreement and the broad order of joint legal custody? Would anyone order or argue that that created an ambiguity? And that's exactly what happened here. The stipulation is acknowledging that with the very narrow carve out of school location, the parties will not have joint legal custody. Mother will have sole custody. Certainly, the conclusion should have been written more artfully. It should have said the parties have agreed that mother will have sole authority for making school choice and therefore has sole legal custody on that carved out issue. But it's clear what the party's agreement was. It's clear what their intent was. And the court approved that stipulation. And it's been in effect for the last 8 years. I don't think that there's any doubt that Judge Ilka got this right. The standard for the petitioner's motion, he's essentially asking the court to modify the judgment and decree. The judgment and decree clearly states and orders that mother has sole rights to determine school location. Father comes in and says, I don't think she should continue to attend school in Stillwater. I want her to attend school in Eagan. Order that she attend school in Eagan. For the court to grant that motion, the court would have to modify conclusion of law number four, which clearly states that that authority is given solely to mother. I don't think that the other argument, if counsel is correct on most of the legal authority that he cites and he argues, it is true that the standard of review, if both parties have joint legal custody on all issues, would be best interests of the child under Novak. And he's also correct in pointing out that if one parent has sole legal custody with respect to any legal custody issue, then the standard of review has to be endangerment as spelled out in Tarwin.
And if I could jump in, Mr. Stokes, and ask you the same question, what's your belief as to what the endangerment means? Is it endangerment to something specific to education or school choice, or is it more broad than that?
I think it would be specific to education and school choice. And I know there's case law that defines endangerment in this context. And I believe that essentially what it's talking about is a child's failure to thrive and failure to develop and failure to make appropriate progress that rises to a level of significant harm to the child. So I don't think we have to go beyond the question of the education itself and the school setting itself. I think it is, that's the question for endangerment. In any event, I don't want to continue to sort of repeat myself on the question of this conclusion of law number four. Again, I think it's clear that the parties agreed to joint legal custody, but did carve out a narrow exception. Again, that's not uncommon. That stipulation was signed by the petitioner. It was signed by his attorney. It was approved by the court. If, you know, if Mr. Dipbrenner says, well, it's absurd to read that provision as the father having given up his right to have input into school choice for the remainder of his child's minority. Well, maybe it's absurd, maybe it's not, but that's exactly what he did. It's exactly what he did. I mean, Mr. Dipbrenner seems to argue that this was just a last minute decision that the parties made for the next school year. So instead of using the parenting consultant, they agreed that mom could pick the school for that next year. If that's what their agreement was, that's what the decree would have said. It would have said for you know, the fall school year, the parties have agreed that mother will select the child's school location. If it said that, and that's all it said, there would be no doubt that that grant of sole legal custody regarding school choice only applied for that first year. But it's not what it says. It says the parties have agreed mother shall have that right. There really is no other way to interpret or read that provision.
Mr. Stokes, if I could, I'd like to move you to the second issue, the modification of parenting time. At least the way I read the district court's order, it seems to me that the court really viewed that decision as contingent upon the first. And reviewing the appellant's submissions to the court, it seems to me that there are two distinct motions, that they are not necessarily linked or contingent. And yet I don't know that there was that type of analysis or treatment given to them by the district court. What is your response?
I would agree that the district court's rulings suggest that the court found that the modification of parent time was contingent on the granting of the motion to modify school choice. And whether the court was correct in connecting those two in such a way, I would leave to this court's determination. I certainly can see the appellant's argument that they are separate and distinct requests to the court. But I understand why the district court linked them together. If you look at the party's decree and you look at the parenting schedule that they have, it very clearly is designed specifically based around the child's school location. The parenting schedule during the school year, mom has Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday overnight. And dad has Thursday, Friday, and Saturday overnight. But then that schedule flips in the summer. So why is that? Well, it's reflective of the fact that one parent lives in Dakota County and the other parent lives in Washington County. And so it would be a hardship on the child to be waking up in Eagan and then having to be transported to Stillwater for school every day. And so it's also makes sense that if the court changed the school location to Eagan, then you would flip that schedule. I mean, the schedule in the, my point is, the party's parenting schedule in their decree is tied to school location. And so I understand why the district court analyzed this motion in a similar manner. And I think if he would have granted the motion to modify school location, I think there's zero question he would have granted the motion to change the parenting time. So he did link them together. I understand that that's not exactly how the motion was pled. I don't think it's an abuse of discretion. I don't think it's an error of law. To some extent, it does raise a question of what findings would have been sufficient. I think that, you know, his finding that it's not in the child's best interest is appropriate. I mean, there weren't any allegations in the petitioner's motion that would have raised questions of best interests under 518.17. It was entirely the motion to change parenting time was entirely predicated on she should be going to school in Eagan. So once the question,
I want to go back to something you said, because I understand if parties had agreed to during the school year, one party's the weekend parent and the other party's the weekday parent, and then that flips during the summer. And I think that's what you were saying, but yeah. As I understand the decree, it looks like it says during the school year, petitioner has Thursday, Friday, Saturday. During the summer, petitioner has Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So petitioner remains.
No, I think that's not correct, Your Honor.
I'm looking at addendum page 21.
Well, let me look at that.
Paragraph 3A and paragraph 3B. They both say petitioner shall have Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then during the summer, petitioner shall have Sunday overnights as well. Maybe it's not important to take up your time on this. It was curious because if in fact they're not flipping the weekday, weekend kind of parenting thing, then it would suggest it's not quite as tied to school choice as you would argued.
Your Honor, I may have misstated how that schedule changes with the summer, but I would submit that it doesn't really matter because she's not in school in the summer. So dad's
in this instance, you're just so limited on time, Mr. Stokes. So, but I mean, what struck me too about this record was both the mother and the father agree that the child's performance really did improve with some input from the dad. I mean, that his involvement with her academics really did help her.
Well,
and she had a much more successful experience. So I just didn't see any kind of analysis of that. And, you know, and people can move. I don't know that the dad's willing to do that, but certainly there are a lot of variables. So.
Well, Your Honor, I think the record also shows that the father had not been actively involved in the child's education for most of her minority. And then that changed when she was in seventh grade, and then his involvement did result in improvement. And I think that that's a reasonable outcome in any scenario where two parents are involved in their child's education and as opposed to one. So I think that's what's really reflected in the record. I think the district court was asking the question, well, first of all, didn't really get to the question, didn't do a best interest analysis on this precisely because of the determination that the proper standard was endangerment. But in any event,
if I can follow up on that, Mr. Stokes, in terms of the proper standard to apply to this motion, I didn't see in the decree any designation of a primary residence. But I do see that the motion father makes is, quote, modifying the parenting time schedule to allow the minor child to reside primarily with petitioner during the school year. So the motion itself, number one, ties it to school. But number two, it says to change in my reading of this, it is to change the primary residence.
Well, and of course,
wouldn't that require an endangerment allegations?
Would,
and then that endangerment means something different for purposes of parenting time than it would for school choice.
You're right. And I think the district court gave the petitioner the benefit of the doubt in looking at the modification of parenting time as a best interest. But I think the court is correct. I mean, because their current schedule provides for the mother to have more than 50% of the overnights in the course of the year, even without a designation of primary residence, she has primary residence. And the father's request would have resulted in him having more than 50%. And that would have been a change of primary residence. And I think that would require an endangerment finding.
And just quickly, that endangerment is that what that means, you think is the same or different from what
it's an endangerment? I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt. It's analogous. It's not precisely the same. It's broader. And it would involve the more classic broad definition of endangerment as opposed to just the educational circumstances were not allowing the child to thrive.
Thank you, Mr. Stokes. Are there any other questions from the panel?
No, thank you.
Okay, very good. And with that, Mr. Stokes, I think we're concluded the respondent's argument, but we're ready to hear from the appellant again.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Before I answer the question posed by Judge Halbrook, so I just want to briefly note that counsel has stated that the decree's language was poorly drafted, which I think is another way of saying that it's unclear. Getting to the issue of the parenting time modification motion, that's a separate paragraph in the motion. Separate facts relating to parenting time modification were raised in appellant's pleadings and were separately argued. Father's February 10th, 2012 affidavit notes that the child had expressed a preference to live with him primarily. Father's May 29, 2020 affidavit noted that father was better able to assist the child with schoolwork, that there was a quieter environment in the father's home to allow the child to stay on task. The child would have improved connections with peers by having more parenting time with him and greater space in the father's home for minor child's hobbies. Those are all independent upon of whether the minor child goes to school. And there is nothing in the record to support any kind of conclusion that the parenting time modification motion was contingent on father's motion. I note that counsel in counsel's brief had stated that somehow his client recollects that there was an argument made by father stating that these two things would be contingent. But I note that it's not the responsibility of the appellant to order a transcript when when mother is arguing that something was stated at an oral argument. It's then burden to order such a transcript. I also want to answer Judge Bryan had to say with respect to this. I think that using the word reside primarily just simply means in this context, I would like to have more parenting time days than mother. And you could do that by doing another number of different types of modifications to the parenting time schedule. Primary residence.
Have we ever used the term primarily reside or primary residence to mean what you're suggesting it means? Isn't that a term of art to some degree?
Well, when people seek to modify primary residence, they say modify primary residence as opposed to, you know, let the child live with me more of the time.
No, but that's not the motion. The motion specifically says modifying the parenting time schedule to allow the minor child to reside primarily, which seems to me very close to saying modifying the primary residence.
Well, as counsel has noted, if you just have the child living with one parent more than the other parent, that is a modification of primary residence. And you could do that by flip-flopping the schedule in the decree. So it just doesn't seem like that should have the endangerment standard applied, that would be akin to
we have looked at motions to modify parenting time and construed them as de facto motions to modify custody, or to put it differently, de facto motions to change the residence.
True. Getting further, I just want to go back to what happened during the parties' divorce proceeding. No argument has been made whatsoever as to why my client, after having joint legal custody and having a parent consultant initially to resolve the issue of school choice, would then suddenly agree to not have any more custodial rights with respect to school choice. I've not heard any kind of explanation at all as to why he would have done that. And that's the problem that we have with interpreting these three sentences in the decree in the way that's being urged by respondent. It just doesn't make sense that he would do that. And if what counsel is saying is that the decree was poorly drafted, then why would
counsel, we- Counsel, I appreciate that your time is going quickly, but if you just expand and respond to the hypothetical that was given during a respondent's argument. So remember the party's original agreement was to have the parenting consultant choose school. If that language had been the third sentence, you know, so just take out respondent and put in parenting consultant, then would that, the language in the judgment decree be enforceable?
If the parenting consultant has chosen the school?
Right. Instead of saying respondent, the third sentence says parties have agreed that the parenting consultant shall have the right to decide the minor child's school location.
If the parenting consultant had decided the minor child's school location, it would be either Stillwater or South St. Paul. And if it went against my client, it was Stillwater, then my client would still have the ability to, at some future date, have the court determine school location on the standard of best interest as opposed to endangerment.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't mean to, you know, take away the end of your argument. Is there some other short addition you want to use to sum up, Mr. Didburner? Go ahead.
Just looking at the context of where the parties ended up when they decided this, I mean, they decided the issue of school location instead of having the parent and consultant do it for them. And they're, given the fact that they reached that agreement, there was really no basis or reason for them to seek to, for my client, to modify, to seek to amend the terms of the decree. He thought that he had retained his rights at that point in time, that he hadn't given anything up except for having school location occur at Stillwater without forever losing his rights to joint legal custody. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to both lawyers in this case. We very much appreciate having you here today and answering our questions and conveying your arguments. And so with that, this matter is now submitted to the court for its decision. We will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe.